Now, there's a mood of defiant nationalism on the rise in Russia, where Putin's annexation of Crimea has proved immensely popular with the masses. As discussed before, this brand of nationalism, aggressively anti-Western, harking back to an older imperialist Russia, has some unusual cheerleaders. They include generals, singers, filmmakers, cosmonauts, and most spectacularly, this group of pro-religion, leather-clad, bearded bikies called the Night Wolves, led by a former doctor known as the Surgeon. You might have glimpsed them riding around Moscow streets with Putin or holding press conferences to declare that they will use violence against any opposition. Is it just theatre, or does it perhaps represent grim normality in the wake of the murder of opposition leader Nemtsov? Now, to try and untangle fantasy from reality, we're joined by journalist Albina Kovalyova, who's covered Ukraine crisis for the BBC and NBC. Albina, welcome to our little program.
Hello, thank you.
Tell us about the Night Wolves. Who are they exactly?
Well, originally they were a biker group. I mean, they started in the 1980s, even before the wall came down, and it was still the Soviet Union. They were basically a kind of anti-Soviet rock force. And then in 1989, they became basically a motorcycle club with their formal name, the Night Wolves, and the Surgeon became the head. But basically, they now have around 5,000 members. They're the biggest bike club in Russia. They existed even before the Kremlin's support. But, you know, in about 2009, the Kremlin contacted them and decided to have a kind of nice photo opportunity with them, with Putin riding around with them. And they became somewhat of a symbol for the new Russia, the new kind of nationalistic flavor of the country.
Now, as you were well, I'm sure you know this, the Hells Angels did security at a famous Rolling Stones concert, but that's about as radical as they ever got. What radicalized this mob?
Well, I would like to first of all say that they themselves do not say they are a mob. They are, in fact, very offended by this concept. They say that we're not a gang, we're a club, we're into motorbikes. So they're very, very sensitive about the term mob being referred to them. In terms of radicalization, that's another issue, I think, you know, whether you can say they're radical or not. I mean, nationalism in Russia, whether, you know, it's radical or not is a big question. But certainly they have always been pro-Russia. They have always identified with the Russian spirit. And in recent years, they've become more nationalistic, saying, you know, we are for the traditional values of Russia and the family, and have basically turned their back against the Western values. Although what is interesting is that they still ride Harley Davidson motorbikes, so it's a bit of an irony there.
Yeah, but they are now, well, perhaps they've always been intensely homophobic, and so there has been a shift. Were they always involved with religiosity?
No, I'm not aware that they were always involved with religiosity. The Surgeon actually recounts a moment where he encountered a priest who turned him towards religion. So that was a kind of personal moment for him. But I think it also ties in with the Russian religious movement, which the Orthodox tradition, which has been reinstated really and has grown stronger in recent years and has really flown into this mood of nationalism, and also exists as a sort of antidote to the Western values like homosexuality, like sort of multicultural diversity in that sense. So I think the Russian state is very much tapping into the Orthodox tradition as something to reinstate what is Russian about Russia.
When I was introducing you, Albina, I mentioned the fact that they talk up violence. Do they commit it, or is it mainly theatricals?
Well, there is certainly no known evidence to say that they have committed any anti-Western violence or any violence apart from perhaps some sort of brawls between different biker groups, but certainly I'm not in a position to say that they've been involved in that either. Their positioning is fierce. They have a very fierce image of don't mess with us. But that is a tough image of the country as well. I don't know if they have been involved in any violence or if it is just show.
Yeah,
but I think that's part of the problem in Russia at the moment. The image and the reality is very blurred. It's the same story with the Ukraine crisis. You know, it started when the conflict first began in Ukraine. There was a lot of media propaganda. It was very image-based. A lot of the sort of images of violence when we were there on the ground didn't add up to the reality. They were it looked like they were fabricated by the media. So in this sense, I think the Night Wolves anti-Maidan, which is a movement they've created recently to fight the sort of pro-democratic movement of Russia, is another sort of media message. I'm not sure that there is actual violence behind it, but it's unclear.
Well, given that Rootin' Tootin' Boot Scootin' Putin loves to get his shirt off and wrestle bears, he must be very drawn to this group.
Well, indeed. I mean, the Kremlin contacted them originally in order to sort of to create this photo opportunity for Putin. And since then, they've been riding around quite a lot together. They fit in pretty well into the sort of picture, I think, that the Kremlin is trying to draw of Putin and of Russia and the toughness and the muscle sort of flexing. Because these guys, I'm sure if you've seen pictures, they look pretty tough and scary.
I'm fascinated by the Harley-Davidson connection. For heaven's sake, Russia has had a long history of building pretty rugged motorbikes.
That's right. Well, that is something that I think next time I meet the surgeon, I will ask him why exactly he rides the American bikes, even though, you know, there are plenty of Japanese or Chinese or Russian bikes he could be riding.
Have you interviewed the surgeon?
Yes, I have. I've recently actually interviewed him for ABC News.
Okay, tell us about him. What's it like up close and personal?
Up close and personal, he's like a big teddy bear. He's very friendly. He's very media friendly. He's all smiles, but the rhetoric is very unnerving. You know, he still talks about the enemy, the fifth column, who are pro-democratic. So it's a very mixed feeling. You know, when you meet him, he's quite a charming man.
You talk about the shows put on by the Wolves. What kind of shows? Tell us about these extraordinary choreographic events that occur.
They are rather extraordinary. Last summer, in August, they staged a massive show with fireworks, pyrotechnics, and incredibly well choreographed. It was something on the scale of the kind of Olympic ceremonies that Russia was staging when the Olympics were on. It was really something amazing with you know, dozens of very well choreographed dancers, people on motorbikes, smoke. But at the same time, the message of them is frightening. You know, it is all about, this show in particular in August, was about how Ukraine was overrun with fascists. The evil West was sort of supporting them. And the rebels, and this is, mind you, in August, this is at the height of the conflict when the violence was escalating. You know, the rebels were portrayed as saviors of the Ukrainian people who were caught up in this conflict and really glorified.
Another undercurrent in the Soviet, well, a major current, was, of course, anti-Semitism. Are the Wolves anti-Semitic?
I'm not aware that they are particularly anti-Semitic. I think they're really, it's all about Russia and the greatness of Russia. It's not about finding enemies within initially. That's, you know, what it became with this anti-Maidan movement. But even, I have to say, with the anti-Maidan movement, which they founded in January, and the messages there were very strong and it was very aggressive, you know, sending a warning to the Russian opposition. Since the murder of Nemtsov, they have toned down that sort of rhetoric and that threat. So I think it may be that the Kremlin has said to them, look, now is the time to tone it down. I think the Nemtsov murder has been a big shock for the whole country, and it's not something that Putin finds acceptable and useful to him.
I used to visit the Soviet in the bad old days, and while, yes, the people hated the regime, they were also very proud of the fact that the Soviet Union was a superpower. And I remember thinking at the time, when this evaporated, that this was, in a sense, a form of emasculation for so many in the population. And the health of men, I remember, deteriorated very dramatically. You know, the life expectancy for men in the Soviet, well, in Russia, in the post-Soviet, deteriorated almost overnight. So in a way, this need to be hyper-masculine, which is, you know, displayed by Rutan Tutan Putin and the wolves, is explicable.
Yes, I would agree with that. But of course, I think the decline in the health of the population, in the general sort of well-being, had to do with the poverty that came after the fall of the Soviet Union. And of course, the democratic beginnings under Yeltsin are really remembered with great anger and distraught by a lot of Russian people who were absolutely absolutely poor and desperate. And Putin's economic growth and stability has actually helped a lot of people become much more better off, much more able to travel and, you know, buy cars and generally have a much more kind of middle class kind of life.
Including, if you wish, Harley Davidsons. Now, okay, what, for every action there's meant to be an equal reaction, but there doesn't seem to be a surge of liberalism, and must be just too damn dangerous.
Well, if you mean by liberalism going out into the streets and protesting the democratic rights or having fair elections or being very serious investigative journalists in Russia, and even, you know, just having businesses that might have conflicts with either the government or the security services or someone who's connected to them, then yes. But I think it's still possible in Russia to have a fairly free life. There is always this kind of schizophrenic feeling that, oh, all our rights are going to disappear and it's going to be impossible. And there is a lot of laws that are being introduced that, you know, really make it difficult for people to continue to live freely. But at the same time, so far, you can live more or less like in any European country until it affects you, like in the case of Nemtsov.
How did you find you were treated when you were wandering around the place asking difficult questions? Were you threatened in any way?
In Russia, I have never had any issues at all. I am Russian. I speak with a clear Moscow accent. Perhaps that helps. I mean, of course, I represent foreign media, but most people understand the role of foreign media. I think as a journalist, it's never been particularly difficult for me. What is interesting is how in society now things are changing, and people now sometimes accuse me of being, of representing sort of Western values and the evil West who is out to destroy Russia. Now that happens not professionally, but just on a personal level where people know that I'm working for a foreign news organization.
Albina, thank you very much for your time. Albina,
it's a pleasure.
Kovalyova, journalist and producer working for The Beeb. This is Len and Elle. Up next, we revisit Galbraith's affluent society 50-plus years later.